It is our pleasure at this time to continue in a study of the book of Job. We are still in the sixth chapter of Job and ready to begin at the 24th verse. In this sixth chapter, Job has been answering the criticisms of his friends. And just as they treated him pretty roughly in their criticism of him, he's treating them pretty roughly as he replies back. He says in verse 21, "For now you are nothing. You see my casting down and are afraid." He said, you're afraid that what's happened to me is going to happen to you, so you're nothing to me. You cannot give me any help. Did I say in verse 22, bring unto me or give a reward for me of your substance? Verse 23, or deliver me from the enemy's hand or redeem me from the hand of the mighty? So Job had to ask him for anything. They're acting as though he was going to require them to give him something. He had asked for nothing. But yet they've treated him as though he has done something wrong and have really put him down. So he comes back in verse 24 now, in verse 25. These two verses, he is asking them to show him where he's wrong. Instead of reflecting on my character, give me some plain instructions and some good solid arguments. Show me from a truthful standpoint where I'm really wrong. Verses 24 and 25 say, teach me and I will hold my tongue, and cause me to understand wherein I have erred. How forcible are right words, but what doth your arguing reprove? Now Job differed with them in the opinion they had of him, yet he was ready to yield to their argument if it were true. He was ready to be shown his error. Instead of reflecting on my character, he says, and insinuating that I've been ungodly, give me some plain instructions, give me some solid arguments, which will show me some real evidence. And I'm ready to acknowledge my error, and I'm ready to admit my fault. He says, teach me, and I'll hold my tongue. I'll be quiet if you'll just show me. For I have often found, with pleasure and wonder, how forcible right words are. Now, if you use the right words, if you have a good argument, and it's a pleasure to hear that, actually, even though I may be wrong. But the method you've taken will never convert me. He says, what doth your arguing reprove? You don't prove anything the way you're going at this. You're just insinuating things and calling me names and putting me down. And that's not truth. That's not any kind of a forceful argument. NIV says, what does your argument prove? Job says, your suppositions have no basis. Your approach to my problem is improper. You gave many facts and truths. A lot of things you said were good things to say, all right, but the way you applied them to my case was very annoying and very unkind. Fair and logical reasoning has much more power, much more commanding power than railing and foul language. That only exasperates and hardens those for whom it's intended. If a person is honest and wants to correct his errors, he'll respond to right words instead of your verbal abuse. Verses 26 and 27 say, do you imagine to reprove words and the speeches of one that is desperate, which are as wind? NIV says in verse 26, do you mean to correct what I say and treat the words of a despairing man as wind? Even though Job had some faults, yet they should not have treated him so hard. He says, do you imagine to reprove words? The word imagine means to contrive with a great deal of art. They were using artistry and imagination to scold him for his words. They were being very elaborate in their descriptions of things. It was as though this proved that he was ungodly. If you had shown me some honesty and charity, he says, you would have interpreted my words in a different manner. Should a man's spiritual state be judged by some hasty words given because of some unexpected trouble that heaped upon him? I'm in a really bad spot here. And it did cause me to say some things that you may want to twist out of context, but really, I shouldn't be judged by that. Is it fair? Is it just? Is it kind to criticize in such a case as this? Would you like to be treated this way? You treat my words as though they were just wind. There's meaning and feeling behind what I say. You look upon my cries as wasted breath. He charges them with taking advantage of his weak and helpless condition. Verse 27, yea, you overwhelm the fatherless, and you dig a pit for your friend. He says you overwhelm the fathers. Now, that's a pretty strong statement. This is a proverbial expression referring to inhumane treatment. The fatherless cannot protect themselves from insults. This encourages persons of low moral character to trample upon them. You've done so by many Job charges. Job, being a childless father, thought of himself as being a fatherless child. Consequently, Job had reason to be offended at those who acted superior to him. Those who abuse any who may be looked upon as fatherless should know that they are rejecting the feelings they should have as humans and are fighting against the feelings that God has toward the fatherless, who is and will be a father of the fatherless and a helper of the helpless. Psalm 146:9, the Lord preserveth the strangers, he relieveth the fatherless and widow, but the way of the wicked he turneth upside down. Job further says in verse 27, you dig a pit for your friend. Not only are you unkind to me, who am your friend, but you use my friendship to ensnare me. When Job's friends came to see him, he thought he could freely speak his mind to them, and that the more bitter his complaints were, the more they would try to comfort him. He was just trying to get through to them what his desperate condition was. This made him speak more liberally than he would have otherwise done. When they encouraged him to talk and then condemned him for it, Job regarded this as digging a pit for him. He felt they had not given him the freedom he needed to adequately express his feelings concerning his afflictions, but whenever it seemed that they were giving him freedom to do this, they trapped him with it. It was like they let him fall into his own pit. Verse 28 says, now therefore be content, look upon me, for it is evident unto you if I lie. He says, what do you see in me that makes me seem to be so wicked? Be content means to be willing. Be willing to look at me. Look me over without being prejudiced. Be honest in your observation of me. You will see that even though I cursed my day, I did not curse my God. And while you're looking, look upon my ulcers and my sore boils. And they will be proof to you that I do not lie. And you will know that I do not complain without cause. Let your own eyes convince you that my condition is truly as I said. You can see that God is my witness, that I do not make it worse than it truly is. Verse 29, Job says, return, I pray you. Let it not be iniquity. Yea, return again. My righteousness is in it. He asks that they consider his condition again without prejudice and partiality. Let not the results be unrighteous. Let there be no iniquity in your actions or your findings, and you'll find my righteousness is in it. That is, I am right in this matter. And even though I do not keep my temper as I should, I keep my integrity, and have not said or done nor allowed anything which will not prove me to be an honest man. A just cause desires nothing more than a just hearing, and if need be, a rehearing. Then verse 30 says, is there iniquity in my tongue? Cannot my taste discern perverse things? After inviting them to look at his situation fairly, he now asks them to hear what he has to say. Have I blasphemed God? Have I renounced God? The iniquity that you charge me with, is it truly in my tongue? Are not my arguments correct? Do my words show that I have an unrighteous heart? I know perverse things when I see them. If I were in error, I would know it. I am able to judge such things, for I know the bitter taste of evil. And so we bring chapter 6 to a close.